This is Julia Ferlin, and today we're talking to Kate Davey, who wrote the book Lady Dicks and Lesbian Brothers, Staging the Unimaginable at the WOW Cafe Theater, which is a book about the women's theater that has existed for 30 years. This is its 30th anniversary in the East Village. Thank you for being with us, Kate.
It's a pleasure.
So, Kate, tell me a little bit about your book.
Well, it's published by the University of Michigan Press. The full title is Lady Dicks and Lesbian Brothers. The subtitle is Staging the Unimaginable at the WOW Cafe Theater. WOW is celebrating its 30th anniversary this fall. It's extraordinary. When it was founded 30 years ago, there were 113 women's theaters in the country, and now there are probably three, if that many. They have survived this whole period and have been really significant historically, sociologically, and aesthetically. Lady Dicks is taken from a play by Holly Hughes called The Lady Dick, and Lesbian Brothers is the five Lesbian Brothers, the theater troupe that came out of WOW. So extraordinary artists have come out of the WOW Cafe Theater over the years. And I'm just delighted to be getting these women the recognition that they certainly deserve, but promises to elude them in perpetuity without this book.
What makes it unimaginable? What makes the performances at WOW unimaginable?
I'm going to quote Robin Bernstein. She's a scholar from Harvard. And she said, quote, "Work coming out of WOW made it possible to think thoughts previously unthinkable." And that's a pretty extraordinary comment to make. And indeed, when I stumbled upon this theater in 1984, I was very much a student of the avant-garde. That was my specialty. In fact, I did a couple of books on Richard Foreman and the ontological hysteric theater. And I came to this tiny little storefront space to a performance called Heart of the Scorpion. And I thought, this little group has just blown the lid off this project. And frankly, it has taken me, I've been working on this book for 20 years, and it's really taken me many, many years to be able to articulate it. Because when you're doing something that's really sincerely outside the box, it takes a while for people to wrap their mind around it. And as Robin Bernstein said, they were doing things that made it possible to think thoughts previously unthinkable. And that's their significance to the avant-garde. It's their significance aesthetically. They took in 1984 and put women as agents of their own desire on the stage. And they didn't do it in opposition to men. They assumed all of the signs and symbols and worked with them as if they owned them. For example, they would do male drag, but they didn't do male impersonation. In fact, there was a play called Paradike's Lost, and in that show, there was a 1930s, 40s film noir detective who was sort of a bogey Cary Grant type. But she was referred to as her and she in the text. So there were always those two things going on at the same time. This was a woman who was playing a role where she got to, you know, be the detective. She got to get the girl. She got to do all the things that Humphrey Bogart would get to do in one of those film noir classics. So they were really taking women's subjectivity and putting it on the stage in an extraordinary way. They were not talking about women's issues. They were entirely feminist, but feminism was not the topic. They were mostly, although not at all entirely, lesbian, but lesbianism was never a topic. It was taken for granted. And that was enormously powerful.
When you say the unimaginable, is there a latent sexual connotation that makes this extra radical or extra difficult to push into any sort of mainstream context?
Absolutely. There's a book that came out in the years since called Female Masculinity, and it really talks about how men don't own masculinity. It's signs and symbols that can be used and played with by anybody. And WOW was doing that years and years before anybody ever thought of that. They really were ahead of all of us, the scholars who were feminist scholars at the time, scholars of the avant-garde. They were pushing ahead of us, and we were catching up with what they were doing. Also, the book very much talks about how the punk rock music scene absolutely permeated the neighborhood in the East Village of Manhattan, where the theater is located and still operating today. And that anarchy that underpins punk was their operating, they adopted it as their operating principle. So one of the chapters is about a system of anarchy. And writing a book about this group when they had no staff, no artistic director, and until recent years, no phone and no records, and yet they were doing as many as 20 original productions a year on a budget in Manhattan of about $17,000 a year. It was based on sweat equity. You work on my show, I'll work on your show. And I don't know if you're familiar with Lisa Crohn's play, Well. Lisa Crohn was developed at WOW, and her play, Well, made it all the way to Broadway to rave reviews. The five lesbian brothers, four of their five plays made it off-Broadway to commercial venues, New York Theater Workshop. So some extraordinary work came out of this very hand-to-mouth women's theater.
What exactly do you mean by women's theater? I mean, is it all women in the audience? Is it women on stage? Are there men on stage? Are there men in the audience?
That's a good question, because I've been on their listserv for years, and there was a point at which someone said, this is a women's theater, and another member of the group said, what do you mean? I didn't know this was a women's theater. I thought it was a lesbian theater. And then somebody else chimed in on the email and said, wait a minute, it's a lesbian theater? I didn't know it was a lesbian theater. So I've interviewed hundreds of women who've been part of this over the years, and it's really difficult to believe that they are all talking about the same entity. And that's part of its extraordinary charm.
What about in the theater? Are there boundaries? Are there men in the theater? Are men doing the lights? Are men invited to their weekly Tuesday meetings?
Men have always been involved at WOW. The premise is that, and it's still true 30 years later, that the theater worlds of New York City, which is arguably the theater center of our country, are still, it's overwhelmingly white, male, not necessarily heterosexual. Gay, white gay men have made enormous strides in theater worlds in New York. But it is still the case that there are precious few opportunities. There are exceptions, but there are few opportunities for women to write their own work, direct their own work, design their own work, act in their own work. And that's the opportunity that WOW makes possible. So they've never been terribly concerned about whether or not they're a lesbian theater or a women's theater. They are about women having an opportunity to play those major roles in theater and get their work on the stage. Holly Hughes said it really well. She said, we're not make nice girls, we're oddballs with sharp elbows. So in 30 years, they've been arguing about men in the space, but they have never set policy. Those ideas can change from Tuesday night to Tuesday night. The only Tuesday in 30 years they haven't met was 9/11. And, you know, there are about 30, 35 women involved at any one time, but hundreds of women have been through there over the decades.
And how big are these shows? From what I could tell on the website, the people who are going to the meetings are also volunteering, you know, to fold programs and usher and help out. Does that mean that there are people in the audience, or is it sort of a closed circuit?
No, different people have different followings. I remember in 84 when I came across them, the audience was made up of these really rowdy women from the neighborhood, some of them from the punk rock music scene, poetry scene. You volunteer at WOW because you want to get a space to do a show, a time slot to do a show. And the more you work on other people's shows, be that designing or schlepping sets around or working the house and folding programs, the more you contribute, then eventually you get your own slot to do your own show. That's how it works. So it's volunteer in a way, but everybody who volunteers has an agenda.
If the punk rock scene tinged so much of the experience at WOW and the audience and the women that are involved with it, what's happening right now that the punk rock scene is definitely, well, it's not in the East Village.
I know. CBGB is closed down in recent years. That's really a good question. And WOW is organic and it changes over time. And in the early years, it was largely white women. Today, it is more than 50% women of color who are working there. So it changes with the times.
How has that changed what the theater produces and who goes to it?
I don't know that it's changed it dramatically. I'll tell you that in the early years, in the storefront years, which was very much a drop-in kind of operation, the women of WOW lived in the neighborhood. That's not true today. I think the only women who still live in the neighborhood are the ones who had rent-controlled apartments from 30 years ago. So the women of WOW live in the Bronx, in Queens, some in New Jersey. That's a huge difference. It's not a drop-in operation anymore, but it certainly draws, I mean, there's a hunger for it among audiences, or it could not possibly survive. It gets by not only on sweat equity, but on ticket sales, which are still very cheap. And it's, you know, it's people looking for something they can't get at a traditional theater or even an avant-garde theater or a theater like La Mama, which is across the street and down the street.
Sometimes with theaters and with the art experiments, especially if they've gone on for a while and they're very accepting, the bar falls. Do you feel like the quality is up and down and all over the place?
Absolutely, but that has nothing to do with them being 30 years old because there are always new people coming in there. No, the reason the quality is all over the place is it's not focused on doing highly polished, commercially viable work. It's really focused on getting in there, getting women up on stage, getting the material tested to see, you know, how it works with the audiences. If you go whole hog with the idea that you can succeed or fail, lots of it fails, but a great deal of it is really tremendously innovative. And even the work that's not commercially viable is really important for the audiences. I mean, they'd close their doors if they weren't still attracting people who want to see the work there. Part of WOW's charm, and I talk a lot about this in the book, is the uneven acting abilities. It's part of the aesthetic. It's part of the charm of the theater. And the audience, I have never, ever seen anything painful at WOW. The audience loves it, no matter what it is, because they are very appreciative of the effort. There's always something that's fascinating about a WOW production. The audience is very active. It's not like they're sitting quietly in the dark. I remember one of the early reviews said that the artists had trouble not being outdone by the feistiness of the audience. So their audiences go for experiences they can't get anywhere else. You know, the L word was our big chance at mass media representation. I mean, those examples of, you know, certain subjectivities and certain cultural experiences are just, you can't find them unless you have places like WOW, where people can go and see people who are really on the fringes of the culture doing something, you know, really courageous and brave. They're committed to making work, to making art. I have just tremendous admiration for these women and what they do and how they keep going. And if it didn't have energy and excitement, it would, you know, New York, it'd close. I mean, the audiences would stop coming and it would close.
Kate Davey is the Provost and Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at the University of Michigan, Dearborn, and the author of the book Lady Dicks and Lesbian Brothers, Staging the Unimaginable at the WOW Cafe Theater. Thank you so much for speaking with me, Kate. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you so much, and good luck, Julia. This was really a genuine pleasure.
Well, it was for me, too. I really appreciate it. It was a great talk. Good talk. Good talk, Kate Davey. Thank you so much for talking to me.
It was a pleasure.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.